So I'd like to tell you a story about a crow and a tarantula. Because one day there was a crow sitting at the side of a lake and he was picking up some grubs, going about his daily routine, when a tarantula crawled up to him and he said to him, surprisingly, he said, Mr. Crow, would you please do me a good turn? I'm really looking for how it is that I can make my way across to the other side of the lake. Only problem is, you know, my little legs are really quite small. It would take me around about 6 weeks to get around there. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to let me hop on your back and give me a fly across to the other side of the lake. I'd be forever grateful. Well, Mr. Crow was obviously quite hesitant. He said, well, listen, Mr. Tarantula, please just stay where you're at. I am fully aware that tarantulas have a bit of a track record and a tendency of biting crows. And you see, I don't want to be injected with your venom. Why? Because I've got a wife and kids at home and I want to get back and see them tonight. So after a bit more conversing, Mr. Tarantula had ended up convincing Mr. Crow to give him flight across the lake. And as they were around about halfway across, they were just chatting away, absolutely fine. Mr. Crow thought he'd found himself a brand new friend when he felt these two fangs plunge into the back of his neck. And that was it. Then next thing, he felt his body seizing up as the venom flowed through his body, and he said, Mr. Tarantula, why have you done this to me? Why have you done this to us? Because my body's seizing up now. I know that I'm doomed for death. We're heading for the water and we're both going to drown. Why have you done this? And Mr. Tarantula said, ha, 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 because I am a tarantula. And that's what tarantulas do. We bite crows. Oh, how'd you feel about that little story, my friends? It's a story of the identity crisis. In life, as human beings, we have a tendency of acting out of accordance with who we believe that we are. Remember, our identity in life, for many people, is going to be a simple perception. How we see things isn't always how things are. By now, I'm hoping you're really appreciating that we are all on this journey as growing in self-awareness and growing in management. But many people who haven't started stand at risk of finding themselves in this place of absolute crisis, stuck at the crossroads in life. They don't know where to go next. They've perhaps spent anything up to a lifetime looking for validation from their efforts, from other people, perhaps people pleasing, saying yes to things they don't really want to say yes to and say no to things that they actually want to say yes to. When we do not know who we are, it leads us to make some seriously unwise decisions. So what I want to do in this video is give you a little bit of context, all right? I want to share with you my life story. Why? Because I've said so many times throughout the course now that in order to lead and coach other people in life, all we ever need to be is a few steps ahead. So I want to share with you some of the steps that I have taken on my journey as I've grown in self-awareness. I'm hoping that you're able to relate. Now, I want to bring a few ideas into the mix here, all right? Because we're all assigning meanings onto things all of the time, especially our past events. The meaning of life is what we make our life's events mean for us here today. We're all kind of living in this place of cognitive time travel, aren't we? We might come back and revisit this idea later on in the course. And if you think about it, yeah, we're all living life here in the present, in the here and now. But, you know, what we do today in the present and how we are today in the present is often influenced or a result of the stories that we've told ourselves about the experiences that we've had in the past. As we look forward to the future, we'll be looking forward to the future in eager anticipation, or in angst, or in fear, or in panic, or in stress, or something like that. But that's always going to be determined by the expectations that we have of what we are going to find and experience. Many people assume that the past equals the future. And by this, what I mean is that the experiences that they've had in the past, they are going to get more of in the future. Well, this doesn't need to be the case whatsoever, because we all have the capacity of making new choices today. But I've got this image on the board right now, all right, to hopefully accurately represent our lives. It's kind of like the timeline of life, isn't it? We all have a starting point over here, represented by the stork and the little baby that was you someday. And then we all have a present, which is right here, right now, which is where you're watching this video, it's where I'm standing. And we all have a point in the future, represented by this tombstone. That's right, we're all gonna croak it someday. That is the only thing that we can count on in life, that we're each gonna die. So it's kind of like we all have a starting point, we all have an end, we've all got this little dash, this little space in between. And what we do with the space in between is gonna be entirely up to us. What we do in the space between is going to be pretty much influenced by how we've interpreted our past life events. Whether we are moving forward into the future with confidence and boldness, or whether we are tiptoeing into the future in a place of fear and angst and apprehension and doubt. So I want to share with you my story, all right? What led me to and what's led me to where I'm at in life today, right? How I have interpreted my life's events and the stories that I've told myself. You know, we all have an earliest memory in life, don't we? We would, in some helping disciplines, refer to these as anchors, all right? Memories in the past that perhaps had some sort of high level of emotion attached to them. Generally, the happiest days of our life, sometimes the saddest days of our life, or the most exciting days of our life, or the most intimidating and fearful days of our life. Sometimes days where we have experienced much loss or much gain or something like this. Now, I can't really remember too much in life beyond the age of around about 5 or 6. Now, I know that some people claim to have memories of, you know, being in the womb and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I'm just saying that I've never had it, so I wouldn't vouch for it either way. At around about 5 years old, all right, I had this experience. Like magic, isn't it? So around about 5 years old, I had this experience. And I don't even know how accurate this experience was, but I can remember the story that I told myself about this experience. You see, I'd gone through my whole life really struggling with low confidence, low self-esteem. I'd really struggled to place any sense of value on myself. Now, around about the age of 16, I joined the military. Remember that story I told you earlier on, that guy who fell into the hole? Guess what? That guy was me. Surprise! I was talking about myself here, but because I was speaking metaphorically, there's a pretty good chance that you were relating the story to yourself. So, when we reach this stage of life where we realise that life can't be about us anymore, we kind of come to this realization that there's nothing really much else that we can do with our lives apart from give, make a positive impact in other people. But for, you know, especially in the early stages, sometimes the first 10, 20 or so years, most of us get trapped in our own little worlds, our own little bubbles. And this is very much where I was. So, going back even 10 years ago, I could boldly have defined myself back then as being the most selfish and self-consumed man in the world. Why? Because I was the victim. You know, life had really dealt me a bad hand, and daddy dropped me on my head and all that kind of stuff. And it actually started around about here. The earliest childhood memory that I have was actually walking into my mom and dad's bedroom back when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And I can't remember exactly what age or what day or anything like this. It's just more like a picture that I have in my mind. And I can remember being quite a high energy child. If you think I'm quite high energy today, just imagine what I was like back then when I wasn't self-regulating. That's right. So I can only imagine I was jumping up and down, bouncing around. Dad, Dad, get out of bed. Take me to the park, do something like this. I mentioned earlier on that my dad used to work away from home a lot. I wouldn't see him sometimes for weeks on end. So the times that he would come home, I wanted to spend time with him because he was my dad. But unfortunately, what my dad's priority was when he would come home, he would spend time catching up on his sleep. So he'd sometimes spend an entire weekend in bed before going back away to work again on a Monday. So I would try desperately to get what attention I could from him, often to no avail. And on this one occasion, as I was bouncing up and down, Dad, Dad, take me to the park, he just rolled over and farted and laughed at that. He thought that was funny. Now, you know, in life, when we don't like things, all right, it's not like we just or have an automatic dislike for things. It's like our tastes change and evolve over time. So if we don't like something, or if we experience something as being negative or hurtful, it's only because we're relating it to the same or a similar kind of experience or event that we've had at some point in the past, right? So all of our memories have to start somewhere. All of our fears and insecurities and self-doubts have to start somewhere. All right, and this is kind of what I'm hopefully helping you to see here. This experience, Dad rolled over, farted, he thought that was funny. I was confused, what did this mean? I'd never experienced rejection on this level ever before. So what I'd done was I carried on. Dad, get out of bed, take me to the park, I want to go play football or something like this. And he rolled over, got angry and said, Kane, get out of here, leave me alone. Now, that some people may refer to as rejection, but how is it that we would know what rejection is if we'd never experienced rejection before? All right, it's kind of like the first time we ever experience something new in life. We don't know what it is unless we have something to compare it to. So all new events, new experiences, we kind of struggle to make sense of. We're looking to relate and give meaning to, as we look desperately to try and relate an experience to something else that we've previously had, because we're meaning-making machines. Now here's the thing, right? I couldn't assign any meaning onto the first experience of my dad rolling over and breaking wind. The second time round, I couldn't really assign any meaning onto this experience, my dad rolling over and saying, Kane, get out of here, leave me alone, I don't want you pestering me right now, all right? Because I didn't see myself as being worthless or as a nuisance back then, because I was 5 or 6 years old. I'm just figuring life out, trying to work out who I am in this big bad world. But then, a couple of years later, I go to school. And I have this childhood sweetheart called Sandra Ning. And she was a little Chinese girl, and her mum and dad owned a local Chinese takeaway. And I just happened to like Chinese takeaways. And I can remember, I used to wash my dad's car sometimes on weekends for pocket money. So I had some pocket money, and one week I decided I was going to sacrifice my earnings to purchase Sandra Ning a Valentine's Day card and a Mars bar. I know what you're thinking, Kane, you true romantic you. Well, this was it, all right? So I ended up going down to the local shop, bought her a Mars bar, wrapped her up, put a little ribbon on, wrote out the Valentine's Day card. Roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so are you. I know, I was a poet as well. And I got down on one knee and I said to Sandra, Sandra, I think I fancy you. Will you be my Valentine? And you know what she said? Nah, you stink. Denied. Here we go. That was me absolutely devastated. But guess what I had here, all right? I'm actually starting to connect the dots, all right? Because guess what? I wanted to spend some time with Dad. Dad said no. He rolled over. Then I kept on asking him. He said no again. He told me to get out. And now I'm asking Sandra Ning if she'll be my Valentine. And she's saying, no way, Jose. I don't want nothing to do with you, Mr. Chicken Legs. So then I go through school. And because Daddy wouldn't take me to the park to play football, all right, I wasn't particularly good at sports growing up, to be honest with you. Guess who the last person was to ever get picked for the school football team? That's right, it was me. And see, in Scotland, when you're going through school, if you are not good at football, you're just not one of the cool kids. So guess who wasn't part of the cool club? That's right, me as well. Another rejection, another rejection. And here's the thing, when we experience something once, it could be a random event, we're none really the wiser to it. When something happens to us twice, well, this might be a coincidence. We just don't know. We're still working things out. But when something happens to us three times, i.e. we've been rejected three times, well, our mind starts working and going in overdrive, and we start assigning meanings onto things. And I've been rejected here, I've been rejected here, I've been rejected here. That must mean that I'm not good enough. Because now the guys are telling me that I'm not good enough to be part of the football team, which means that all those other people must see me as not being good enough as well, which must therefore mean that I'm not good enough, which must therefore mean that I can't just be myself, because who I am at the core isn't good enough. I must try to be someone else. My goodness. So then I go through school and I've got this certain way of retaining information. And I get called dyslexic and I get put in one of the dumb kids groups. Could you believe it? And they call me names, some of these other boys and girls, because kids can be so cruel. They call me thicky and they call me stupid and they call me Dumbo and stuff like that. And I genuinely believe that I'm limited in my ability to learn and solve problems. And guess what happens to my confidence? Absolutely. My confidence gets absolutely crushed. Why? Because I have drawn my identity from the responses that I've had from other people in my past. So here I'm now, I'm starting to question myself. Who am I? Because Dad doesn't want to spend time with me, and Sandra Ning doesn't want to be my Valentine, and the guys don't want me on the football team, and here I'm now failing my exams, and I'm getting put in the dumb kids group, and then I go to join the army. I just want to get away from this world that I've come to know and experience. And guess what happens? I fail my first military entrance test. My goodness, I'm absolutely devastated. And through all of these things, up until the age of around about 20 years old, I was drawing my identity, who I believed I was. Now, I'm not saying I was drawing my true identity, because we cannot draw our identity from things. Our identity is a constant. But because no one ever sat me down and said, Kane, this is exactly who you are, right? I was none the wiser. And as I suggested a few videos back, us growing in self-awareness is kind of like a lifetime process. Back then, I just didn't know any better. So I assumed that the way in which I saw myself was true. I believed back then that my perception was a reality. And here was, my identity crisis was born. So I ended up getting into the army, cutting the long story short. Why? Because I saw the army as being something significant that I could do with my life. Now, answer me this question, friend. Why would anyone feel the need to desperately do something significant with their life if they were grounded and confident and secure within themselves? I'm guessing the only time we ever feel the need to do something significant with our lives is if we don't fundamentally feel that particularly significant. Well, this was me. This was pretty much my life story. So you can probably understand, much of which I've shared throughout the course up until now, even in the early stages of me getting into coaching and helping people, I was coming coaching people from a place of need. I actually needed to make a difference in other people so that I fundamentally felt significant. This need to feel significant kind of became kind of like a ghost of my past that kept on biting me in the present. And what I'm going to suggest is that we'll all have one. I never felt like I was enough as a human being. I lived in this place of identity crisis. So when I look forward to my future, all right, if you'd asked me back when I was 20 or 25 years old, Kane, Ramsey, will you be standing in front of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people around the world, teaching them and answering questions and training people how to coach in life? I would have said no. Why? Because I can't learn. Because I'm thick, I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I'm not smart, I'm not even a particularly good communicator. But then, throughout the process of growing in self-awareness, I grew to realize and make peace with the fact and accept myself and accept my imperfections and all that kind of stuff. But here's the thing, all right? If we are not growing in awareness, if we are not growing in self-knowledge, in the facts of who we are, that we're going to stand at risk of forever being ensnared to our pasts, the assumptions that we've made about ourselves. It's important that you understand this. I've shared with you this story about me so that hopefully you can relate on some level, because you're going to have a past as well. You've come from somewhere, and the meanings that you've assigned onto all your main past life events will have influenced and impacted where you're at in life today. If I was to ask you right now, who are you? Remember that question I asked in the last section of the course? take away all of your stuff. Take away all of your worldly possessions. Take away your role. You're not a mum, you're not a dad, you're not a son, you're not a daughter, you're not a brother or a sister or a friend or a boss or a manager or an employee or a leader. Take away all your successes. Take away all your failures. Take away all your wins, all your losses. Take away everything that you've done, everything that you're good at. What's left? Who are you? How do you respond to this question? All right. Because how we respond to this question will ultimately determine how confident we are stepping boldly into our future and being who we are. It's only when we've made peace of who we actually are and we've embraced our self-worth, the value that we have to offer, that we're going to start extending this value to other people and ultimately start making a difference. But this is just a story of identity crisis. 9 times out of 10, people will act out of accordance with who they believe they are. All right, I shared with you a couple of examples throughout the course so far. Criminals, people who've come through the prison service, who keep on reoffending. Why is it sometimes that addicts keep on going back to those things that they claim to be addicted to? Why is it that workaholics keep on working? Why is it sexaholics keep on having sex? Why is it that people who define themselves as being obese keep on going back to that cookie jar? All right, why? Because we commit to being that which we identify with. All right, let's come back to the story of Mr. Crow and Mr. Tarantula, if you found that little story entertaining. Guess what? Granted, we may have been a certain way for anything up to an entire lifetime, but who we decide to be from this day moving forward is a choice. And this choice is going to become far more apparent to us the more that we grow in self-awareness and the fact that we actually even have a choice. You with me? Is this all right? So, in the next video now, I'm going to go back to having a conversation with Karen. And remember in the last section, we had that conversation asking Karen to reflect about and give a generalized story of her past, and then also of her present, and also of her future. So Karen is now aware of those three aspects of her life. Now what I'm going to do, we're going to focus in on Karen's story and the actual steps that she's taken to get from where she was in the past to where she currently is today in the present. And we're going to see if we can start whittling down and defining or establishing how it is that Karen actually defines herself, right? The truth about who Karen believes that she is. Because how Karen currently defines herself is going to ultimately determine how boldly and confidently she steps out of the comfort zone and into those things, those roles that she ultimately wants to fulfill moving forward. Are you intrigued? You should be. I'll look forward to seeing you again in the next clip.